and then figure out what was working and go deep with a handful of products that worked, and that's where we're doing it now. We're probably at this point, if you take into account Zillow and some of the other internet lead generation, on the buyer side, we're probably generating upwards of 200 to 250 buyer leads a month right now.
Okay, awesome. So give us an idea, Chris, of just what is the first thing that you guys do when you get a contact from Zillow?
The very first thing, it doesn't matter where the contact comes in, but, you know, the very first thing when an internet lead comes in, the goal of anybody on the team is to respond to that lead. If they have a phone number or email, we prefer phone if they can, within 15 minutes. I'd like to see an initial contact within 5 minutes of every internet lead that comes in.
And how do you think you're successful with that?
You know, I think we are. I think we're having some growing pains right now, just because of the sheer volume of leads that come in. And that's one of the reasons we're looking at hiring a lead coordinator. Because if my buyer's agents are out on the road and they're driving around with clients or they're touring homes, it's very difficult for them to stop what they're doing and respond to a lead within 5 or 10 or 15 minutes. So that's why we're actually looking at putting a lead coordinator in place whose sole purpose is to respond to those leads, nurture those leads until they're ready to get to a point to transact and then hand them off to a buyer's agent. But, you know, I think for the most part, we average around 15 minutes right now.
That's not bad. I can see, and for the people on the webinar that don't know me or my background, I owned and ran a real estate brokerage in Phoenix myself as well, and generated a fairly significant number of leads from my website, phoenixrealestateguy.com, and we had the same philosophy. I mean, you want to make fast contact, but it's tough because if you've got, like you said, Chris, if you have buyer's agents in the field and they're with a client, it's probably not even really appropriate for them to go, well, excuse me, I'm standing in the living room with you guys, but the phone just rang, and or I got a text message or whatever, and I got to respond to this lead. So it's tricky to get that done. So what do you do if you don't get a phone number?
If we don't get a phone number, we've experimented with a couple different options, on how to respond, and we're testing both right now. What we've been using and what has been a very successful tactic for us is to short, sweet, and to the point. It simply says, hey, thanks for the inquiry. We're here to help. What's the best way to connect with you, email or cell? My cell number is, and then I give it my cell number, and it says, I'm free now, are you?
Okay.
And what that does is it prompts them to either call my cell phone number, or more often than not, they reply with their cell phone number. I'm not free right now. However, I'll be free this afternoon. Here's my cell phone. We're also experimenting a little bit with kind of customizing that a little bit more if they have an inquiry about a specific home. And that all depends on how much time my buyer's agent has to get in touch with them. So, you know, what I'd like to see them do is, you know, thanks for the inquiry. We're here to help. And then after that, they'll actually put a little bit of property information. Hey, thanks for the inquiry. We're here to help. You know, you contacted us about 123 Main Street. You know, that property was purchased in 2009 for $475,000 with $18,000, in seller subsidies. I'm free later on. How are you? So we're going back and forth on the short and sweet and giving them a little bit more detail, because I think a little bit more detail just gives them a little bit more trust that they're actually speaking to a human instead of some sort of automated response.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. I see that Karen Van Ness has joined us. Let me see. Karen, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Could you give us just a real quick introduction of who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Karen Van Ness with Coldwell Banker here in Rancho Santa Fe, California. I have over 35 years in the real estate industry and have worked in various states in the United States in real estate. I've got a background also as a developer and as an architect, but have been purchasing and selling homes and representing buyers for over 35 years now.
Well, I'm looking at your picture on the screen, so if you've been in real estate for 35 years, you must have started when you were, what, like four?
I did start at 17, actually.
Really? That's awesome.
I did.
So kind of what Chris was saying, what's the first thing you do when you get an internet lead?
The first thing I do is respond to the internet and know that I'm here for them, and I ask them what would be the most convenient way to communicate with them, via text, email, and or phone.
Okay, and what do you do? What is your response to, let's say, do you get good success on getting response to that? How do you want me to communicate? I mean, I'm assuming for both you and Chris. And Chris, I muted you temporarily because I'm hearing that there's some feedback. So I'm thinking it might be because we've got multiple callers on the line. So Chris, you can't talk right now, or you can talk, but nobody will be able to hear you. But I'm assuming that both of you guys. Sometimes when you reach out, if not frequently, when you reach out to these internet leads, you get no response. Karen, is there anything that you do in particular when you don't get a response from an internet lead?
Well, yes. When they respond to me with a phone number, I call them immediately. If I don't have a phone number, then I send my email message. I'll answer a question they've asked regarding, for example, a homeowners association fee. But generally, I keep it very vanilla and offer to be there, be of assistance, let them know I'm honored to be, and find out how they'd like to get, you know, how they would like to communicate. If they don't respond, we then follow it up with three contacts per day for the first week. It's never gone that far. It's never taken longer than 48 hours for them to come back to us. What we find is that a great many of them really enjoy texting. We have an associate who handles our lead conversion. Her lead conversion right now is at 86%. And she converts them. They get qualified, pre-approved with our lender. Then they are brought into the office for their consultation appointment where they sign a buyer broker agency. And we're off to the races.
So you said 86% of your leads convert?
That's what our conversion rate is. We've got a new system that I mentioned this at the Tom Ferry. My husband developed a software system. It's called the Rain Machine. And between that and we brought in an assistant, and all she does is lead conversion, and we're right now having an 86% conversion. It's almost killing me.
And how are you defining conversion? Is that conversion to a sale, or
that's conversion to a client who is then signed up with a buyer broker.
Okay. Well, that's phenomenal.
It is. It is phenomenal.
That's probably the biggest number that I've ever heard.
I have had incredible success with conversion in the past in different respects, but not with email, not with something like this over the internet.
And what do you attribute to that conversion rate? Is it the fast contact? Is it the three times per day?
I believe the studies say that it's all about the fast contact, and to some degree that I believe that and I agree with it. Because if they're on the computer and they just sent you the message, then their mindset is obviously on finding a home and somebody. However, sometimes I can call them back literally within 2 seconds and they don't pick up the phone. So they obviously don't want to pick up the phone. But then we then stay on top of it because they've reached out. They have a question for a reason of some sort. And I find that they appreciate tremendously that we continue to reach out to be of service to them.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. I'm going to turn Chris back on. Chris, you're back on. What do you typically do when or if you don't get a response from a contact?
We do something similar, and you know, we have our buyer's agents who have, you know, there are all kinds of different programs out there. The, you know, the 10 days of pain or the, you know, the 2-week follow-up. You know, we give our buyer's agents 2 weeks. They make multiple contacts per day over the 2-week period, and you know, usually some sort of communication has occurred during that 2 weeks. If not, they go on to, you know, a drip campaign, an automated drip campaign. You know, because I want my agents to be able to move on to the, you know, to the next lead that comes in. I had to pick myself up off the floor for that conversion rate. Our conversion rate isn't anything near that. You know, I think ours is running, depending on the source of business that comes in, you know, for the multiple sources of business that we generate leads from, Zillow is far and away the highest. And I think it's over 50%. I don't have the exact number, but you know, it's much higher than anything else that comes in. So we go through something similar. It's kind of the 2 weeks of attempting to make contacts, whether it's through email, phone, text. If there is no contact, they then go on to a drip. And what we see is usually based on those drips, if the drips are set up correctly and the searches for those drips are set up correctly based on what they were searching for, what they inquired about, they usually circle back around at some point.
Okay. Let me ask both of you guys a couple of questions about, for lack of a better term, let's call them difficult leads. Let's say you get a contact from someone that wants to look at 123 Main Street, and you go into your MLS and you realize that 123 Main Street is already under contract and about to close. Chris, how do you handle that type of lead in particular?
That's actually our best kind of lead that comes in, because it's very easy for us at that point to talk about the value of a relationship with a real estate agent as opposed to searching online. You know, so we turn all of those around into the positive and, you know, say, you know, thanks for searching. Unfortunately, that home is under contract. That's one of the challenges. And I've got the script somewhere. You know, that's one of the challenges we face today is the, you know, some of the outdated information on the internet. We ask them how their search is going, and then we talk to them about, you know, our IDX that they can use and search, and we can keep an eye on their searching, or we can work with them directly in the MLS and find them accurate information. So we really turn that into what I'm guessing is probably a frustrating experience for them into, hey, we're here to help you. We have access to the information that's accurate and up to date. Let's start looking.
Awesome. Karen, anything to add to that? How do you deal with a lead that's looking, or is, at least initially contacted you looking for a specific home?
Well, of course, we love being contacted because that's what this is all about. Whether the home they've contacted us about is available or not is quite honestly not necessary.
Welcome to GoToWebinar, Web Events Made Easy.
Three that I can tell you at any moment in time which house is available or under contract, and the others I can't. So it comes in one of the others where I've got to sit down at my computer. I'll generally tell them I'm on the road driving and I need to get to my office, and I'll call them back in, you know, half of an hour or 1 hour. As soon as I pull it up, if in fact it is contingent or pending, whatever the case may be, I now know what they're looking for, and I come up with a list of other comparable properties that fit that description, and then contact them back and let them know that the one that they looked at is not available. And, you know, properties can be put onto Zillow when they're loaded onto the multiple listing services, but because of the lack of cooperation, in my personal and professional opinion, of the multiple listing service with Zillow, it doesn't allow Zillow to have an update on, you know, this goes to speaking to values as well as status. And so that's why Zillow will have properties that show for sale when in fact they're not for sale. It's because the multiple listings won't exchange the data. So, you know, but nonetheless, here are some properties that fit the criteria in the same area, in the same price, and sometimes there's even a better property that's on the market than the one they called about.
Right. So it sounds like from both of you guys, the key is basically to not blow off the lead. Just because they call and say, hey, I want to see 123 Main Street at 3 o'clock this afternoon, you've got to explain how listings work on the Internet, how something that they may be seeing somewhere may not be available, but you still reach out and help them, right? And that's what I'm getting is the key takeaway from this, to not just laser focus in on that specific home that they're looking for, but rather laser focus in on your ability to help them. Does that sum it up?
Absolutely.
Okay. How about, do either of you, Chris or Karen, get calls about Zestimates. People saying the Zestimate's off or that they don't understand it or whatever.
I have explained it numerous times, and I'm very comfortable, and it has not caused any problems any longer. I explained that as a result of the multiple listing service not cooperating with Zillow, the only information that Zillow can pull on homes is from the county assessor's records. And that has nothing to do with homes that have been updated and remodeled on the interior, neighborhood characteristics, an unusual or specific location that adds to the value. And that as a result, the Zestimate is not a whole lot different than just going through the county assessor's records. And so as much as Zillow has done everything they can to make that number as accurate as possible, that's not going to happen until an agreement is reached and the multiple listing service makes that information available so that Zillow can comb through it and come up with accurate estimates. So I usually tell people if they're not happy about that number to go to the local multiple listing service and file a complaint with them for not cooperating.
Okay. Oh, now I got disconnected from the webinar. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Chris, do you have anything to add to the estimate conversation?
Yeah, I mean, you and I have been on plenty of internet postings and things like that about, people getting so upset about Zestimates. In all of the leads that we've gotten in and all of the discussions I've had with my clients, I don't think that a Zestimate or somebody's, somebody getting stuck on that number has ever resulted in any sort of negative conversation. I think most people are bright enough to understand that it's an estimate of value, but, what we tell them is that in order to determine the accurate value of your house, we need to get in it. We need to look at it. We need to talk about upgrades. We need to see your carpet. We need to see your granite. We need to see your stainless steel. We need to see if you've done any renovations. Sometimes those just don't, there's no way for any website to estimate that. And, it's just, we need to get in to give you our professional opinion. And everybody just, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I think, because I, obviously, as Zillow's Director of Industry Outreach, I pay a lot of attention to the discussions that are going on within the industry about Zillow and Zillow's products. And, this estimate has, since day one of Zillow's launch, been the subject of some discussion. I have always, long before I started working at Zillow, and I've only been at Zillow since March of this year, but long before that, as a real estate agent and broker, to me, it was never really that difficult a conversation to talk about the Zestimate. It is a software algorithm that, like you just said, it can't see inside your house. It can't hear the neighbor's dog barking next door. It doesn't know that the house down the street has a Ford pickup up on blocks in the front yard. I mean, it's a piece of software, and it's the key word in the Zestimate is the word estimate. It's not an appraisal. It doesn't
exactly.
Take the place. Doesn't take the place of a real estate professional who can put eyeballs on the property. And I never had any difficulty with clients. I mean, people, people asked about it and they inquired about it, and they're like, well, particularly when you would go on a listing presentation, and somebody might say, you know, an internet savvy client might say, well, you know, the Zestimate says the home is worth this, you're saying it's worth that, why the difference? It's a 30-second conversation. And buyers and sellers are pretty smart. They get that. At least that's been my experience, and it sounds like their experience too. I'm going to pick up a couple of questions from the attendees. And again, if anybody's listening in and has a question, you can leave a question in the little question box that's on your control panel. So let me scroll back up a little bit. This is from Greg. I'm not even going to try to pronounce Greg's last name because I'll mangle it like everybody else does probably. Greg Z. He's asking, it looks like when you were talking, Chris, if there's a, you're talking about a lead coordinator, and Karen, you mentioned a lead coordinator too, and Greg was asking, is there a commission split that's given to the lead coordinator in your ideal model, or what? How does your lead coordinator get paid, I guess is really the ultimate question.
Well, the our lead coordinator, when that individual is hired, will be on a will be paid a commission at settlement based on the lead that individual has qualified and handed off to a buyer's agent. We're going to take that out of our side of the split that we have with our buyer's agents, because we have an extra percentage built in off the top of the commission when it comes in before we do our split with buyer's agents. For overhead, and that will then go to the lead coordinator. And you know, I think that doing it that way, again, we're new to it, but I think doing it that way incents that lead coordinator to come up possibly with their own way to generate leads, really kind of think outside of the box. You know, if I'm doing this for Zillow leads and I'm doing this for this type and this for this type, What if I try this, or Chris, will you go shoot a video for this community and do a blog post about it because we're getting a lot of interest on it? I want that individual to really feel like they can have some sort of control over increasing their potential by thinking outside of the box. So yeah, we're going to be paying them a commission at settlement.
Okay. Karen, any thoughts on that?
Our lead converter, she is paid hourly, and we then bonus her based on her conversion rate.
Okay.
And her conversion rate, we keep a table of the leads when they come in, and we move them through the pipeline from when they first come in, they're a lead, and then they go to a contact once contact is made. Once they have an appointment to come in, they get promoted to appointment. From appointment to client, that's when they are signed as a buyer broker or as a listing. And she gets bonused on each stage of that. So it is to her benefit to stay on them and coddle them and take care of them and bring them along in the process to the point where they are handed off to an agent and ready to go.
Okay, so that your lead coordinator is not licensed, is that correct?
She is licensed. Okay. However, she is not commission-based. We don't do anything with commission.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask you guys this. Let's take a step back and say you're the small sole proprietor, just the one guy out there trying to do everything on his own, which is where probably the vast majority of real estate agents fall. They may not have the means or the capability to hire a lead coordinator. Do you have any kind of tip for that lone wolf out there that's trying to go it alone?
I'll speak to, and I mentioned it earlier, and my husband did this specifically. I didn't really want to get back into building a team, and so my husband's an engineer. He developed the RAIN machine. It's a software program that would allow me single-handedly to manage my leads. And I've worked with Top Producer through the years. I've worked with a number of systems, but I never found a system that I could
You broke up there, at least for me. I think we might have lost Karen.
So now I do have a team. But I think that for a one-man shop with the right system, your leads, put them in the pipeline, it has to be systematic. You have to have a system. Systems come before people. If you don't have a system, doesn't matter how many people you have, the systems are what keep everything moving along smoothly.
Okay. Karen, I'm going to ask a favor of you, if you don't mind. Your audio is cutting out pretty bad, at least on my end, and there's a couple people saying they're saying the same, hearing the same thing. Could you try hanging up and calling back in and see if we get a better connection for you?
I'll do that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
A couple more questions while we're waiting on Karen to get back online. That covers that one. Here's an interesting question from Lorraine, and I saw this myself as a broker with some of my agents. And the question from Lorraine Arriaga is, some realtors do not follow up with leads without a phone number. What are your thoughts? And I know I'm supposed to be moderating the panel and not answering questions, but I'm going to give you my own thought as well from this, from a broker perspective, not as Zillow's director of industry outreach. I tested my website forms and registration and contact methods extensively, and I found that without question, I got far more internet contacts when I did not ask for a phone number. And I've been in lots of discussions about what's the best way to get internet leads. You know, can you increase the quality of the internet lead by asking certain questions? And from my testing, at least in the Phoenix market, what I found out was the less I asked on a contact form, the more often it got filled out. So I got to where I just asked for a name and email address. But I had some of my own agents that would tell me, Jay, these leads that come in without a phone number are crap. They never respond to emails. I want a phone number. So I think it's, in my perspective, I think it's a balancing point whether or not you require a phone number, you force a phone number to be entered. Chris, have you played with that at all? Do you find you get more leads without a phone number, but that the phone number leads tend to convert easier? Any thoughts on that?
We subscribe to the same philosophy that you do, is less is more. On our website, we simply require first name and last name. I actually don't even require an email address and a phone number, and, you know, I'll tell you why, is that if they want a response, they're going to provide an email address or a phone number. If they wanted to put something bogus in, they're going to put something bogus in. But if they're a legitimate lead that provides that information, then we'll have an opportunity to get in touch with them. We actually have a system on the back end that if they provide an email address, we'll at least send out I don't know what the piece of technology is, I should, but it'll verify whether the email address actually exists on a server somewhere. So before I even, you know, try to attempt to send them an email, I know that it's a valid email address, not just the format, you know, abc@abc.net or something. But again, less is more. If I force them to fill something out, they're going to fill out something bogus. If they want a response, they're going to put in the information to get a response from us.
Right, and I found the same thing as well. And another thing that I told my agents, that by not forcing a phone number to be entered, that when someone does give their phone number, that is an invitation to call them. Again, web users are pretty smart, and when they see that the phone number field is not required, but they willingly put in their phone number, they are asking you, they are begging you to call them. And I think that's a really important point. I don't know if we've got Karen back yet. And I apologize for the audio. I'm getting some feedback that the audio is choppy. I don't know what to do about that. I thought it might be Karen's connection. If someone could drop something in the chat box or in the question box, if it's better or worse, some Mitch said it's much better. We'll see what happens when Karen comes back online. Let's see if we can't grab a couple of more questions. Here's a good one. Do your agents pre-qual before meeting a lead, i.e., what do you do with the lead where some, and we've all gotten them before, someone says, you get a lead at noon, and they say, I want to see 123 Main Street at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
We leave it up to the discretion of the buyer's agent on what they think is the best course of action based on their discussion with that individual. If the individual isn't forthcoming with information, if the person doesn't really want to talk about getting pre-qualified, or, you know, let's just put it out there, seems shady, or there isn't a good feeling, I leave it up to the discretion. The rule of thumb on the team, though, for us, is that generally we'll give everybody one chance to get an appointment without getting pre-qualified. And I know that that's, you know, that's probably something that a lot of people disagree with, but the goal of our goal of our buyer's agents is to form a relationship with an individual. And if by going out to show a quick home may help deepen that relationship or get us a buyer agency agreement with that individual, we'll give them a shot. So we don't require pre-qualification before we go out to meet with a client. After the first time, though, they're going to get in touch with either our lender or their lender and get us a pre-qualification letter, because we're not going to show them homes that they can't afford.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So it's somewhat agent-dependent is what I'm hearing. If one of your agents gets a lead and they say, I want to see this house at 2 o'clock, you basically leave it up to the agent to decide whether or not to show that house at 2, assuming they can, of course.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I would find it difficult to dictate to each agent on my team what they should be doing, because it's based on what their work schedule is. You know, if they can show it at 2 o'clock and they're going to be in the area, you know, swing by and show it at 2 o'clock.